The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
So we welcome our doctor, Dr. Brittany Dean. How are you today, Doc?
Good afternoon, Bees, and good afternoon to all the listeners out there. I hope everybody's having a wonderful Tuesday. And of course, we do have an interesting topic today. Somebody asked about yellowing of the eyes yesterday. So I thought, John, this was a great topic for us to discuss today. Just get what the causes of jaundice are, what exactly is jaundice, and how do we manage it, how do we prevent it in certain cases. And of course, while we are talking about a specific topic, anybody can feel free to call in or send a WhatsApp on their own medical topics as well.
Yes, of course. Let me give you those numbers so you can tune in and get ready to call us up when it's that time. The numbers are 625-2257 or 627-3223. Those are the numbers to call when we say so. You could also from early send in your WhatsApp messages to 3061065. You could also message Sky and Sangeet, and they will send messages to us right here in studio. So let's kick it off. What exactly is jaundice, and why does the skin and eyes turn yellow when someone has it?
So this is a great question. So jaundice is really a sign that something is affecting the person's body, their ability to process or remove something called bilirubin. And bilirubin is a yellowish pigment that is produced when the red blood cells in our body break down. Now, normally what happens is that the liver actually filters out this bilirubin, and that is then excreted in something called bile through our digestive tract. But when this entire process becomes disrupted, either because the liver is inflamed or the bile ducts are blocked or the red blood cells are breaking down too quickly, then this bilirubin starts to build up in the blood. And this excess bilirubin actually causes the skin, the eyes, and sometimes even the inside of the mouth to take this yellowish hue or this yellowish tint. Now, it is important for people to understand that jaundice is not something that you can just catch, but it is a symptom of an underlying issue, because some people out there believe that jaundice is contagious, but that is actually a myth. The causes behind jaundice, things like hepatitis or gallstones or hemolytic anemia, they may require very different treatments. So the yellowing of the skin is essentially the body's warning sign that something deeper is happening. Recognizing jaundice early is very critical, because it does indicate anything from minor temporary liver stress to serious medical conditions that will require a person's or a doctor's urgent medical attention.
And is jaundice a disease by itself, or is it a symptom of something else going on in the body?
So I would say that jaundice is best thought of as a symptom, not exactly a standalone disease. It is something that signals that there's an imbalance somewhere in the body's processing of that bilirubin. And that could be because of three main issues that I briefly touched on yesterday. So before the liver, where there is an increased breakdown of the red blood cells, within the liver itself, where there's problems processing that bilirubin, often from liver conditions like hepatitis or alcohol-related damage or even fatty liver disease. And after the liver, where the bile duct itself becomes obstructed from, say, a gallstone or tumor or even scarring. And understanding these different categories becomes crucial, because the management of jaundice is going to depend entirely on which actual pathway is affected. People tend to think that jaundice always means just liver disease, but that's not true. For example, newborns will often develop something we called physiological jaundice, because they have immature livers and it will take time to handle that bilirubin efficiently. And that is something that will usually resolve on its own, depending on the level that the newborn has it at. Now, in adults, jaundice could come from something as mild as, say, a temporary medication reaction, or something as serious or complicated as pancreatic cancer. So while jaundice really alerts us to a problem going on within the body, only proper evaluation and tests can actually uncover the real cause.
And how common is jaundice, and does it affect, well, babies, as you just said, children and adults differently?
So jaundice is actually common in newborns. It affects about 60% of full-term infants and about, I would say, 80% of premature babies. In babies, it is usually temporary or harmless. And like I said, it's caused by that immature liver that hasn't fully developed the ability to process the bilirubin. And in most cases, we will tell the mommy to take the baby outside, expose the baby out to some sunlight. So simple sunlight exposure, even phototherapy. So sometimes in the hospital, you'll see some newborns under some lights. That is what we call phototherapy, that can help resolve that jaundice in a few days. But it can be dangerous if the bilirubin levels get too high in newborns. It leads to a condition called kernicterus, and that can actually cause damage to the baby's brain. And that makes, you know, this early monitoring of jaundice very essential and necessary when it comes to newborns. Now, when we look at adults, jaundice is less common, but it is often a bit more concerning because it is usually a signal of an underlying liver or gallbladder or even a blood-related issue. So mild jaundice in adults can happen after infections or use of certain medications or even short-term stress on the liver, but persistent or severe jaundice is something that will always warrant medical investigation. And I mean, children, they generally fall somewhere in between. A lot of cases are benign, but pediatric jaundice can definitely signal conditions like hepatitis or an autoimmune disorder. But the key takeaway here is that jaundice can mean different things depending on the age and the context, and the treatment must be tailored accordingly.
And of course, can lifestyle habits like alcohol consumption, poor diet, and certain medications increase the risk of jaundice?
So absolutely, lifestyle does play a huge role in the risk of developing jaundice, particularly when it comes to a person's liver health. So, of course, we know excess alcohol consumption can lead to alcoholic hepatitis, and eventually that can, and both of those things compromise the liver's ability to process bilirubin effectively. Similarly, when we're looking at a diet that is high in processed foods and the unhealthy fats and the sugars, all of these things increase the risk of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which we talked about yesterday, and that has actually become one of the leading causes of jaundice worldwide. Now, chronic obesity and uncontrolled diabetes, that also contributes significantly to a person's liver health overall and their chances of developing jaundice. Medications can also trigger jaundice, so certain drugs like antibiotics, statins, anti-seizure medications, even the herbal supplements, they can cause liver injury if taken in improper dosages, and that leads to bilirubin buildup. So people tend to think that natural remedies cannot harm the liver, but a lot of herbal products have actually been linked to liver toxicity. I would say that maintaining a balanced diet, avoiding the excess alcohol, and of course discussing the potential side effects of medications with your physician are definitely essential in preventing any sort of lifestyle-related jaundice.
Folks, we're getting ready to take some of your calls and your questions with any medical topic. Any medical topic that may be on your mind or a friend's mind, or maybe, you know, something happened to you a few weeks ago, a few years back, or something happened to you right now. You need a second opinion. Call us up. 625-2257, 627-323-306-1065. You're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM. Sky 99.5 and Sangit 106.1. Good day, doctor. Does a yellow fingernails considered jaundice if your fingernails are yellow in color?
So when we're looking at jaundice, we usually look at the eyes, first of all, and we usually look at the skin. Yellow fingernails by themselves, they're not necessarily a sign of jaundice, but, I mean, they can be if you have other accompanying factors. Now, sometimes people do get a yellow discoloration of their fingers or their palms when they eat foods that are high in beta carotene. So like your carrots, your pumpkins, your sweet potatoes, even certain supplements can cause it, but it's usually harmless and goes away. Now, if the yellow discoloration has started on your face or in your eyes, and then it spreads to the skin, then jaundice is more likely in that case.
Good day, doctor. What causes very dark skin color on the heels of the feet, and is that an indication of something?
So this can be an indication of several different things. Dark colors on the heels can just be calluses or dry, thick skin that has developed. And I mean, the heels naturally have to just withstand pressure. So it is common to see people getting this dry, cracked heel that is dark in color, that constant friction and pressure as well. Sometimes people do get hyperpigmentation, and that is just a response from some sort of inflammation, some sort of trauma that happened to the heel. If you are not regularly taking care of your heels as well, then dead skin cells can accumulate. But there are medical causes that we have to consider. So like, if somebody has circulatory issues because they have peripheral arterial disease or they have diabetes, then that can lead to darkening of the skin on the heels as well. Even fungal infections can lead to that.
Let's take our first call. Hello, good afternoon. Thanks for holding.
Hi, good afternoon. I just have a question to say. I'm the guy who you can call up. Not very often, but once in a while, and be the line spoken and keep walking. Just wanted to say that today is actually 40 months since I quit smoking, and the only side effect I have from it is that I help. So, for all those out there who want to quit, my advice to you is don't think about quitting, don't put it off and done.
Thank you very much, sir.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. That's a very good message, and congratulations on your 40 months.
And in terms of quitting smoking, Doc, what are some ways that one could, try their best to quit smoking? Of course, some people could do it cold turkey, but what are some ways that people could get into it if they choose to quit?
So I would always say that, yeah, there are some people that can just up and quit one time. There are some people that have to ease their way into it. But you have to understand why you're quitting and why that matters. And once you educate yourself on why smoking is harmful for your health, you know, people start to understand that just within 20 minutes of quitting, your heart rate and your blood pressure drops. Within 3 days, your breathing improves and you get an increase in your energy. Within a year, your risk of heart disease is actually cut in half compared to somebody who has continued smoking. And there are smoking cessation clinics that are available for persons who really want to quit smoking. But, you know, set a personal plan, you know, set a quit date, identify your triggers like your stress, your alcohol, social situations, and find some healthy substitutes. So for some people, that is the sugar-free gum. For some people, it's some herbal tea, the deep breathing exercises. So those are just some of the small ways that people can just start.
All right. Of course, once again, 625-225-7627-3223. We will be taking some more of your calls later on any of your medical topics. You're listening again to the Lunchtime Doctor with Dr. Brittany Dean. All right. And are there any medical conditions like hepatitis or gallstones that make someone more prone to developing jaundice?
So, yes, there are several medical conditions that directly increase a person's risk of jaundice because they either affect the production, the processing, or the excretion of bilirubin. Hepatitis, whether it is caused by viruses or alcohol or autoimmune disorders, it inflames the liver and it makes it less efficient at removing that bilirubin. Gallstones as well are another major culprit because they can block the bile ducts, preventing that bilirubin from leaving the body. Now, when this happens, jaundice often appears suddenly, and for these persons, they may get accompanying symptoms like abdominal pain, fever, dark urine. Another condition is pancreatic cancer, hemolytic anemia that we would usually see in persons with sickle cell disease, liver cirrhosis, and strictures, meaning that there's narrowing of the bile ducts themselves. And in these cases, jaundice is usually a secondary sign of a bigger issue that requires urgent attention. It is important for people to understand that while jaundice itself is not dangerous, the underlying cause can definitely be dangerous. So early detection of these conditions, like the hepatitis or the gallstones, they can prevent complications, and in a lot of cases, they help to save lives as well.
And besides a yellowing of the skin and eyes, what other symptoms should people look out for in respect to jaundice?
So yellowing of the skin and of the whites of the eyes is the most obvious sign of jaundice. But there are several other early and secondary symptoms that can indicate an underlying issue. So if somebody has dark colored urine or pale or clay colored stools, itchiness of the skin, if they are more tired than usual, if they have a loss of their appetite and unexplained weight loss as well. Some people do experience nausea, abdominal discomfort, or bloating. It's really dependent on the cause of the jaundice. For example, jaundice that is linked to gallstones may present with right-sided abdominal pain, very sudden right-sided abdominal pain, while hepatitis-related jaundice is more accompanied by fever and malaise and flu-like symptoms. It is important for people to understand that jaundice itself is not painful, although you will get that itchiness. In some persons, they do get the itchiness more than others. But the associated symptoms will often reflect the seriousness of the underlying conditions. So persistent fatigue and itching or digestive symptoms, those are things that you should not ignore. A lot of people believe that jaundice only affects the skin, but these systemic symptoms, they will often appear before the yellowing itself becomes noticeable. And recognizing them early on does help to get you a diagnosis faster and get you to treatment and management faster and prevents any sort of serious complications.
And how come, doctor, does the eyes is such a, you know, one of the first signs of jaundice? How come it affects the eyes, you know, even more so than the skin?
So what happens is, like I said, that bilirubin is that yellowish pigment. And what happens is that because the sclera, which is the white of the eyes, is rich in something called elastin, that actually has a strong affinity for bilirubin. So basically, it's like a sticky mat for this bilirubin to stick to. And that's why doctors will usually check the eyes first, because yellowing can appear here because of that strong ability of the sclera to attach bilirubin to it.
Can it affect the skin instead of the eyes? Let's say somebody is very, like, dark skin. How can you tell and you're not seeing it in the eyes?
So you will always see it in the eyes. So some people may have a tint in their eyes when they are tired, when they are, you know, stressed out. You will see a tinge of the whites of the eyes, not as white as it used to be. But when you actually pull up the eyelid, you'll see the actual color of what the sclera is supposed to be. And that is what we would usually look at. We would look, we'd pull up the eyelids and pull down the bottom lids to look to see if there's any sort of pigmentation at all within the eyes itself. And if we notice that sometimes, you know, if you are a darker skin tone, we would notice that the person is itching more than usual. And that's because you have that buildup of bilirubin under the skin as well. Sometimes you can even see it in the mouth and in the gums.
Okay. Are there any warning signs that indicate a jaundice might be linked to something serious like liver failure or cancer?
So there are red flag symptoms that should never be ignored. So if jaundice appears suddenly and intensely, for example, you just wake up one day and your eyes are yellow and your skin is yellow and it is accompanied by severe abdominal pain, persistent vomiting, unexplained bruising on the body, confusion, or even swelling in your legs or in your abdomen, that could actually indicate acute liver failure or another life-threatening condition. And other concerning signs that people have presented with would be things like they have rapidly lost weight, they are persistently itching, there's blood in their stools, they are chronically just fatigued and tired, and these things can indicate liver cirrhosis or pancreatic cancer or even bile duct obstruction. People tend to think that jaundice always resolves on this on its own, or you could go and jarry out the jaundice, but that is not true. In reality, jaundice can sometimes be the first visible sign of serious disease, including cancers of the liver, of the gallbladder, of the pancreas. Now, if jaundice develops suddenly, especially in adults over the age of 40, you definitely need to go and seek medical evaluation rather than trying to self-treat yourself or waiting out the entire process.
And how is jaundice diagnosed, and what kinds of blood tests or scans are usually needed?
So diagnosing jaundice is a comprehensive clinical evaluation. And then after that, you will have some blood tests done. And sometimes imaging studies may also be required. So your doctor is going to usually order a liver function test to check the bilirubin levels and to assess the enzymes that are in the liver. So the ALT, the ASP, the ALP, the GGT, all of these things are just, you know, some letters that you will see on your blood test, but they are basically enzymes that are within the liver. And those things can help to determine whether the issue lies in the liver or in the bile ducts themselves. A complete blood count may also help your doctor to identify whether or not you have anemia, if you have any sort of infection, if you have breaking up of the red blood cells, which we call hemolysis. And then there may be additional tests that are done, like hepatitis screening, autoimmune markers, or even iron and copper studies, depending on what is the suspected cause of this person's jaundice. Now, if your doctor suspects that there is a blockage or there's some sort of structural issue that is suspected, then the imaging techniques will come into play here. So an ultrasound, a CT scan, an MRI. These are the modalities that are commonly used. In certain cases, there are certain evaluations that can be done. So something called an MRCP, which stands for magnetic resonance cholangiopancreatography, and that is basically an MRI of your biliary tract itself. And then there's something called ERCP, where you can visualize the bile ducts more closely. And for the very persistent or the unclear cases, a liver biopsy may also be required to assess the extent of damage to the liver. Now, I listed a bunch of different investigations here, but the goal of all of these tests is not just to confirm jaundice, but to also pinpoint the underlying cause of jaundice, because like I mentioned previously, the treatment is dependent entirely on the root problem.
All right, folks, in just a short while, once again, we will be taking some of your calls, some of your messages. 625-2257, 627-3223. If you didn't get in the last time, now is your time to get in. 3061065, that's our WhatsApp number. Let's take some calls right now. Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, babe.
Yes, hello.
Yeah. Doctor, I have a very weird question. I have a 2-year-old who, when he poops, it smells higher. If he's in the room and he make a poop, you can smell it from how where you are. Is there any remedy for this?
Is that
Doc? Yes. So that could be a range of different things. So it could be from dietary issues to even infections or digestive problems. The most common cause is usually diet-related. So if you're feeding him a lot of dairy or juice or processed snacks, that can lead to that issue, and excessive milk intake as well. Can cause lactose intolerance, and that will lead to, gas and bloating. Even foods like eggs or high sugar juices, they will naturally just make his stool smell stronger. If he has lactose intolerance or dairy insensitivity as well, that can lead to all of these different issues. And even if he has malabsorption issues like celiac disease, or any other sort of digestive disorder, that can cause the stool to be very greasy or very smelly or often pale or floating. So you definitely, if it is a very big issue, please go and get him checked out by a pediatrician first of all, and they will make the proper recommendations. And most likely it could be a dietary related issue.
I think she's calling back. Hello?
Yeah, she cut me off before I even go to lift the volume on the radio. So I didn't hear half of what she said.
Hi, Miss. Well, oh, you listen. Oh, you turn off the radio and listen. Well,
so basically, what I'm saying is that there are different causes. Dietary issues could be one of them, especially if he's eating a lot of high processed foods, a lot of dairy or juices. If there's any sort of digestive tract issues or malabsorption issues, like celiac disease, or even infections like gastroenteritis, that is also a cause of a child's or a toddler's stool smelling very strongly. And I do suggest that you do go and take him to the pediatrician and let them properly assess him, just to make sure that there's no underlying issue, because more than likely it could just be a dietary issue, but let them make the proper recommendations.
Thank you. All right, let's get some questions here. Good day, Doc. Is it okay for a woman over 40 years to take a pap smear?
So, in terms of a pap smear, yeah, it should be very much fine for a woman over 40 to take a pap smear. It is actually, I would say, highly recommended. And that is really just to check, the abnormal changes in the cells of the cervix that can be caused by HPV. For ages around 30 to 65, I do believe it's either the pap smear alone every 3 years and the pap smear and the HPV co-testing every 5 years. Over 65, the screening may actually be stopped. Mm-hmm. if you've had normal pap smear results.
All right, another question here. Coming in for the lunchtime, doctor. If someone's gallbladder is removed by surgery, can that cause you to get jaundice?
So, if the gallbladder itself is removed by surgery, now, what that is saying is that gallstones may no longer be the cause of your jaundice or the cause of jaundice. But jaundice can still occur in a person who has had their gallbladder removed, because remember I said that jaundice can occur in three different phases. It can be either because the red blood cells are breaking down too fast, and that person has hemolytic anemia. It can be a liver issue itself, or it can even be a tumor within the biliary tract or even in the pancreas itself. So there are other causes of jaundice without having a gallbladder. But the I wouldn't say that the surgery itself can cause jaundice. There is evidence to show that something called an ERCP, which I just mentioned, can lead to pancreatitis, which can indirectly at some point cause jaundice, depending on how that process goes. But again, far-fetched. But there are other causes of jaundice besides the gallbladder and the gallstones.
Good day, doctor. What are some of the, is there any causes for an unusual size belly button, and can this be a health hazard in the future?
So if the belly button itself is bigger than usual, this could be the sign of an umbilical hernia. It could be that, you know, this person just has a bulging or enlarged belly button, and an umbilical hernia just happens when a small piece of the intestine or fat pushes through a weak spot in the abdominal wall. We do see this commonly in sometimes pregnant women or adults with obesity or infants. Sometimes it's just a natural variation. Some people just have different shapes and sizes depending on how your umbilical cord has healed after birth. And I wouldn't really say that it is much of a problem unless it is a hernia. Then you have to properly get it assessed and monitor it depending on the size.
All right, folks, of course, any more questions at 625-2257, 627-3223, and WhatsApp us at 306-1065. Right, for the woman who called, message earlier on, I'm talking about the pap smear. 70 years old, right? Of course, at what age should one start?
Did you say 70? I thought it was 40.
No, 70 years old.
Oh, okay. So, no, if she's 70 years old, then the screening is usually stopped once she's had consecutive pap smears, mm-hmm. Stating that, you know, everything has been normal. And that's usually screening within the last 10 years. So if she has not had any sort of screening, then she can go and get the pap smear done.
Okay. And what age should a woman start having a pap smear?
I would say at the age of around 21, you know, have that pap smear every 3 years.
Mm-hmm. 21. All right. So we return to our topic of jaundice, people, and we'll see if you could slip in some more of your questions, of course, later on. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, and Sky 99.5. If someone notices your yellowing of the skin, when should they see a doctor versus monitoring it at home?
So any sort of new onset yellowing of the skin or the eyes is something that should be taken seriously and should be evaluated by your doctor, especially if it is in adults. Now, there are some cases like mild newborn jaundice that can resolve naturally, but in adults, jaundice will often signal that there is an underlying liver or bile duct problem that requires some sort of prompt investigation. And you definitely should seek urgent care if that yellowing is accompanied by the abdominal pain, the fever, the vomiting, the confusion, rapid weight loss. All of these things can signal a medical emergency. Some people, again, they think that they can just wait it out or rely on home remedies, but this can be very, very dangerous. Jaundice really improves without actually addressing the cause. For example, jaundice from gallstones may need to be surgically removed, while jaundice from hepatitis might require some sort of antiviral treatment. And of course, delaying the evaluation is going to lead to complications, for example, liver failure or even irreversible scarring, which is cirrhosis. And I would say that the safest approach is always to seek medical advice if you notice any signs of jaundice, rather than monitoring it at home.
And what complications can arise if jaundice is left untreated, especially in adults versus newborns?
So leaving jaundice untreated can lead to serious and sometimes even permanent complications, depending on the underlying cause. In adults, untreated jaundice caused by liver disease can progress to liver failure, to cirrhosis, and even to liver cancer. Obstructive jaundice from, say, a gallstone or from a tumor of the bile duct, if that is ignored, that can cause a life-threatening infection known as cholangitis. And the chronic untreated jaundice can also lead to, you know, very severe symptoms like severe itching, malnutrition, fluid retention, bleeding disorders as well, because the liver does play a central role in digestion and in our blood clotting mechanisms. Now, when we're looking at newborns, complications are different, but they are equally as serious. If a newborn has persistently high bilirubin levels, that leads to the condition that I mentioned before called kernicterus, where the bilirubin actually causes or crosses into the brain itself, and it causes permanent neurological damage. And that leads to developmental delays, hearing loss, even cerebral palsy in some cases. And that is why pediatricians will carefully monitor jaundice in babies. And they may recommend treatments like the phototherapy or even exchange transfusions in very, very severe cases. But jaundice is something that should not be ignored, whether it is in an adult or in an infant. Timely diagnosis and proper management are definitely essential to avoiding the long-term complications.
So jaundice in newborns, I mean, when you discover jaundice in the newborns, in terms of the, like you suggested, the treatment, jaundice, should parents really be worried? But can jaundice really kill a newborn?
So jaundice in newborns, there is a bit of a gray area, because you can have physiological jaundice. Like I said, the newborn's liver is not well equipped to handle the processing of that bilirubin yet. And when the baby is frequently fed, when they are properly hydrated, when they're placed under the blue lights, then it usually resolves on its own. But when the bilirubin levels are too high, then that baby may be taken into NICU, and that is when we get into that area where it can become very complicated, and it can become very serious, because this kernicterus can lead to developmental delays, like I said, and permanent neurological damage and cerebral palsy, hearing loss. All of these things can stem from that baby having that high level of bilirubin that has led to brain dysfunction.
All right, we do have a couple of questions coming in there. 50 minutes away from 1 o'clock, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, 625-2257. If you choose to call, 627-3223. Let's get a WhatsApp message. Is aspirin safe to use?
So when we're looking at aspirin, I would say that in persons that have had cardiovascular situations before, they are usually prescribed low-dose aspirin to take on a daily basis. Now, low-dose aspirin is for the heart attacks, the strokes, the blood clots, often the person who has the history of heart disease or stroke, or they've had some sort of stent placing, etc. But low-dose aspirin is something that really should only be taken under medical supervision because it does increase your risk of bleeding. It does help to thin the blood. So I wouldn't say that persons who do not require it on a daily basis should be taking it on a daily basis.
All right, let's take a call. Thank you for holding. Oh, we lost that caller. Let's try line two. Feel free to call us back, caller. Lost that one as well. Call us back. Sometimes you're calling while the doctor is in motion there, and we can't really break the call. All right, let's go again. Hello, good afternoon.
Hey, what's up, Doc? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Always, I like any more medicine and health and thing, right? So I was wondering, I know it has robots doing surgery, okay? Now, and somebody, is it that some doctor, somebody is controlling the robots to do the surgery? Or it is just programmed to do it? And so why do you, doctor cannot do the surgery instead of the robot? Can you explain why it would come to us?
So, this is a very good question, and people tend to think that robotic surgery means that the robots operate by themselves, but human surgeons are fully in control of robotic-assisted surgeries at all times. So the surgeon is going to be controlling the robot using a console that translates the surgeon's hands, their wrists, their finger movements into extremely precise movements of these tiny robotic instruments. And essentially, the robot is acting like an extension of the surgeon's hands. And the reason why robotic surgery is a thing is because it does help with greater precision. It does help with the flexibility of the surgery and, of course, steadiness as well, especially if you're looking at very delicate and hard-to-reach areas. So the surgeon is still very much controlling the robot.
All right, let's see if we have another call coming in there. Let's get to this question. Hi, Doc. Is a PSA reading of 0.333 good or concerning?
So a PSA is prostate-specific antigen, and basically this measures the amount of protein in the blood that is commonly used to screen for prostate health problems. A PSA of 0.333 is considered very low, and it's actually considered normal.
All right, so that's good. You have a good PSA there, caller. Just giving some time to see if anyone else is going to try to call us back. If not, we move on and we wrap up our questions on the jaundice for today. Of course, you're listening to Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1 and Sky 99.5, The Lunchtime Doctor. All right, so are there any situations where hospitalization is needed, or can most cause or most cases be managed at home pertaining to jaundice?
So whether jaundice requires hospitalization really is dependent on the severity and the underlying cause. Mild cases caused by temporary issues like medication side effects or mild viral infections, that can sometimes be managed safely at home with monitoring and supportive care. Of course, the person still has to go and get evaluated to get the proper diagnosis and to be properly managed. But jaundice that is accompanied by high fever, by abdominal swelling, confusion, vomiting, and rapidly rising bilirubin levels, that will usually require a hospital admission so that this person can be urgently investigated and treated accordingly. Hospitalizations, they may also be necessary for newborns with severe jaundice because they are going to need phototherapy or even exchange transfusions to prevent that brain damage from occurring. Now, in adults, hospitalization is more likely if the jaundice results from liver failure or a bile duct obstruction or infections like the cholangitis, because these are going to require immediate interventions. And I would say that the key is really early intervention and early medical evaluation so your doctors can decide whether that outpatient management is safe or if you are going to require urgent hospital care.
I don't know if I'd asked you this before. In terms of jaundice being treated, does treatment depend on your underlying cause?
So jaundice treatment is not a one-size-fits-all. It really is dependent entirely on why it developed in the first place. So if jaundice is caused by hepatitis, then antiviral or supportive therapy may be prescribed for that person. If it is caused by alcohol-related liver disease, then the cornerstone of treatment here is the complete abstinence from alcohol, along with medications and nutritional support to support that healing of the liver. In cases of gallstones or a bile duct obstruction, treatment may involve surgically removing the stones or procedures like the ERCP, which I mentioned earlier, to open the blocked ducts. For hemolytic jaundice, meaning that the red blood cells are breaking up faster than usual, then the treatment focuses on correcting the cause of rapid red blood cell breakdown, so addressing any sort of autoimmune triggers or even any sort of infections that is leading to this sort of anemia. I guess across the board, supportive care is definitely necessary, so hydration, proper nutrition, avoiding substances that stress out the liver like alcohol, the unnecessary medications, and the herbal supplements. There is a common misconception that there are quick detox cures for jaundice, but the reality is jaundice only resolves when the underlying issue is treated. So self-medicating or delaying your care can worsen liver damage, and it is just going to lead to more complex problems in the long run.
All right, and can jaundice be prevented? And if so, what steps can people take to keep their liver and gallbladder healthy?
So not all cases of jaundice are preventable, but many are linked to lifestyle and can be avoided by protecting your liver and gallbladder health. So practicing safe sex, avoiding the sharing of needles, and getting vaccinated against hepatitis A and B will significantly reduce your risk of developing these liver infections. Limiting your alcohol intake, maintaining a healthy weight, and even controlling conditions like diabetes and high cholesterol are also critical to preventing fatty liver disease, like we discussed yesterday, and also critical to preventing gallstones, which are two of the major contributors to jaundice worldwide. And of course, getting your regular health checkups are equally as important. So if you know that you have certain risk factors like a family history of liver disease or frequently using medication, and people will often believe that jaundice just happens, but the reality is that most cases are linked to modifiable habits and very early detectable conditions. So prioritizing liver-friendly habits, staying hydrated, eating a balanced diet, avoiding unnecessary medication or supplementations, they are effective ways to keep bilirubin processing very smooth and to prevent any complications of jaundice in the long run.
And I saw some calls coming in there. Let's try them. Hello, good afternoon.
Doctor, tell you about this. So yesterday, I saw a man who had a lab coat in, a lab coat, with name, surgeon on it, stethoscope around his neck, and they found him. And that is alarming because he could have given his prescription, a wrong injection. How was that possible? That is alarming, and that should not happen again, Doctor. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, we spoke about that yesterday, Doc. Thanks a lot. Yes. For real.
Yeah, so definitely. So most doctors, well, actually all doctors, are supposed to be registered under the medical board, and we are given a little card that gives us our registration number, etc. And in terms of the pharmaceuticals, The pharmacies would usually have the doctor's registration number, and those that are equipped to provide prescriptions.
All right, somebody is messaging. I get another PSA level. This is 0.33%. Is that good result? And can you explain what are the acceptable ranges in the PSA?
So a range, a PSA number of 0.33 is definitely acceptable. The acceptable ranges, I mean, sometimes it does vary by age. So I would say under 14 is 0.0 to 1. 40 to 49, it will go from 0 to 2.5. 50 to 59, we would usually accept to 0 to 3.5. And just going upwards just by one increment. For 60s, it would be up to 4.5. And 70 plus, we would accept somewhere between 0 to, I would say, 5 to 6.5, mm-hmm. depending. Yeah.
All right, let's get a question here.
Good afternoon. Please ask the doc, if somebody has been diagnosed with partially blocked bile duct or even fully blocked bile duct, to help things along in an emergency situation, would you recommend the use of a bile salt supplement? Thank you.
So I would not recommend a bile salt supplement, especially if it is an obstruction in the bile duct, because that is not going to alleviate the obstruction. The only thing that can alleviate that obstruction, for example, if it is due to a gallstone, is having that actually removed. So if you or you know somebody that has a bile duct obstruction, then they should go and have that surgically removed.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get into our final question there about the jaundice today, lunchtime doctor. And remember, you can catch us tomorrow again with more of your medical questions. So final question, what role does diet, hydration, and avoiding alcohol play in preventing liver-related causes of jaundice?
So diet, hydration, alcohol consumption, they will all play a critical role in liver health and in preventing jaundice. A balanced diet that is rich in your antioxidants, your lean proteins, your healthy fats, plenty of fruits and vegetables will help to reduce inflammation and helps, you know, support your liver health overall. Now, incorporating the leafy greens, the citrus fruits, the healthy fats like the avocado does help to promote optimal liver functioning. And equally as important as all of that is just staying hydrated. Adequate water intake does help to aid the kidneys and the liver in basically excreting any sort of waste products, including that excess bilirubin. I mean, alcohol, on the other hand, is one of the most damaging factors for the liver. So chronic or excessive alcohol use definitely increases a person's risk of fatty liver, alcohol, hepatitis, cirrhosis, even bile duct damage, and all of these things do lead to jaundice. So even social drinkers need to be very mindful, especially if they have other risk factors that are present. And I would say that the key takeaway is that your small daily habits matter. So choosing the nourished water, avoiding the alcohol, or even just keeping it to a minimum, those are the most effective ways to protect yourself from jaundice and any other liver-related disease.
Well, that's our time for today. We'll catch you tomorrow with another great topic. Thank you very much.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.